Hey gang, this week's episode of Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project, is brought to you by Tested Premium Memberships. To find out how you can support Tested directly, go to tested.com/membership. And now, on with the show. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Wow, that was quick. We just sat down for a second and then you were gone.
Hey man, when we're doing it this early in the morning, we got to get them in and get them out before the meters turn on. That's my goal. It's always to get out of here before they turn on the parking meters.
So I want to try and stay kid friendly with this story, but my friend Jax, who's Australian, she's one of the producers on MythBusters. She's spends a lot of time over the past few years here in the United States working on MythBusters, of course. But she goes back to Australia, I guess, a couple of years ago, and she's there for like, I don't know, a few hours. And she hits the street, and someone leans out the window and yells at her, "Get him out! Get him angry!"
So is this a traditional Australian greeting, or is this horrible misogyny? I don't know.
I think all of the above. Okay. But Jax is like, oh, it's great to be back in Australia. Get him out. Get him angry.
What does that even mean?
Who wants boobs to be angry?
Oh, we're talking about boobs.
Well, get him out.
Oh, okay.
There's a pair, right? Mm. So get him out. Get him angry. Who wants boobs to be angry?
Nobody wants. Nobody. I've never wanted boobs to be angry. No. I want them to be happy. I want them to love me.
No, this is a culture that apparently... one of their euphemisms for the female pudendum is growler.
Yeah, that one I was always weird.
That's the worst nickname I've ever
imagined.
Sounds
like the making of a Marty Cooper animation.
It was. Yes. There was a horrible moment of awkwardness with an Australian friend of mine when I was going up to Russian River, the brewery, to get beer. And at the time, you would get beer in these big glass jars that you call growlers. So I said, "Hey, I'm going to go up to Russian River and grab a couple of growlers." Right. And he said. He just looked at me like, what the hell is wrong with you?
So it gets better. The Australian euphemism for their sphincter is coit.
Okay, like the tower?
Right. So the Australians on MythBusters have always stayed in housing that is over in the North Beach and Marina area because there's fully furnished production housing. Stuff that the production company rents.
And they come in for a few months while you're shooting and then leave.
And, you know, some of them, like Alice, was here for 9 years. Benny was here for 5 years. And just, you know, so these guys come and live here. And the first time one of the Australians sees, first, Coit Tower, right? Then it's like, you're kidding me. Really? Coit Tower. And then they pass by Coit Liquors and... Coit Cleaners.
Well, the cleaners is a new process.
They are pissing themselves.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Australians.
Spelled the same way, too.
Yeah, they're all prisoners. What do you expect?
So my fidget today is something we should do a piece on, but these are my Rich Ross Doppelganger Productions, the guy who makes beautiful PKD Blade Runner guns that are hand-sculpted by him, of all stripes, minis, snubs, snipers, etc. These are some chess pieces that he made, and I had one that broke at a party, and Rich not only repaired it, but he also replaced it, and he also sent me an unpainted one.
Is the peacock? That's a peacock, right?
I think it is a peacock.
Is it the queen?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the queen.
It's a sculpted out of Super Sculpey, the original.
I think so. Beautiful. I think so. Yeah, they're beautiful. It's anyway, I don't want to give too much away about it because it's one of my favorite pieces and we should do a nice test about it. But Rich Ross is the man.
Wow. I got nothing for the segue.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
I was Australia, Blade Runner,
Mad Max. Have you seen the trailer?
All the trailers.
Here's
what the trailer says to me. You can shave Charlize Theron's head and give her raccoon makeup, and she's still one of the loveliest women alive.
And take off one of her arms.
Yes.
But she's missing an arm?
Yeah. I think the trailer hides that fact.
She has a robotic arm.
Oh, but, nice.
That trailer, which Joey, who shoots and edits and produces our videos, he is not watching. He loves Mad Max and not watching any of the trailers.
He's on a tremendous amount of self-control.
A no-trailer policy. Because he, for at least a year,
right,
just to enhance his enjoyment of movies, but I couldn't resist. And the Mad Max trailer,
it's a freaking badass trailer.
The international version uses the same theme. It's a Mozart song that they use in the beginning of Battle Royale.
Oh.
Oh.
On the bus ride?
No, in the logo.
When
they talk about the PR
act. Nice. Yeah, that trailer stuff, like the original Gladiator trailer used music from John Milius's Conan the Barbarian.
It's a lot of about like knowing, hey, here's a thing that if you've seen before, this is going to evoke the right emotion in you, right? Well, so they pull your triggers.
It's trailer editors, man. Yeah. They log those perfect pieces of music.
And at their point, I mean, it's an art form. Everyone appreciates the art of the trailer, I think, is the website. And they do like their best trailers of the year, the analyses for both trailers and end title sequences. It's before the score is done, so they have to pull from and other licensed songs, and sometimes movies that did not get a wide acclaim or wide are very popular. Like Sunshine, Danny Boyle's Sunshine, has one of the best scores, and one of the songs in that movie is in like every action trailer.
It's in the
Star Trek trailer. It's in, and people just like, oh, they're pulling from that trailer again.
Oh, that's funny.
That movie again.
Just an old standby at Industrial Light and Magic. Once a month, you would go and see all the shots that had been completed in the previous month by ILM. So you'd go and sit in D Theater over there on Kerner Boulevard, and for 30 or 40 minutes, you'd watch, I remember one month, it would be all ocean shots from Perfect Storm, right? But there's no sound because they're not doing the sound.
Yeah.
They might be, but it's totally separate. There's a guy at ILM, one of his jobs is to cut the completed shots reel together, and always uses bits of music that makes it super thrilling.
Oh, I mean, music is unbelievably important to that, but I wanted to go back and talk to the trailer. I started doing that too. For stuff that I'm especially interested in, I don't watch trailers at all anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm in a theater, I don't close my eyes or do anything precious like that, but I don't seek out trailers for movies I'm interested in. I haven't seen the Ultron trailers. I haven't seen... the Captain America. What is it?
Civil War.
The Civil War. I don't think there's a Civil War trailer yet.
There's not yet.
I didn't see any of the Frozen, the Winter Soldier stuff before that was out. I didn't see any of the Guardians. I watched the first Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. I was like, no, I want to see this. I'm in. I'm not going to watch anymore.
Hmm.
And it helps manage expectations in a way that I can go into the movie cold and appreciate it without A, ruining all the action sequences. Which is always happens when you watch a trailer.
They do ruin the action sequences, and sadly, there's just no correlation between a good trailer and a good movie.
Right.
None.
None. I've seen amazing trailers for absolute just terrible, terrible films, and terrible trailers for great films.
Prometheus!
Yeah.
I can keep them separate. I love the sizzle.
I watch them all. Yeah. I watch all the trailers, and sometimes multiple times. I show other people. I'm terrible about it. I love it.
I go back and watch them after I've seen the movie. Like, that's one of my... I love doing that.
Right, right.
What did they sell? What did they do?
A DVD extra.
Yeah.
Two trailers included. Remember when you bought first bought DVDs? We also have behind the scenes and the two movie trailers.
Featurette.
So you've seen the Mission Impossible...
I did see that.
Oh, boy.
Nine trailer?
Mission Impossible 5.
The one not by Brad Bird.
It looks great.
It's directed by Chris McQuarrie.
Chris McQuarrie.
He's a writer. He wrote, and I believe he directed Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Oh, now Jack Reacher, I actually genuinely enjoyed.
I did too. I know people hated that movie.
Jack Reacher is... You hated it?
I know people hated it. Yeah. It's such a guilty pleasure. Now,
it is a guilty pleasure. This is the thing. We were talking to Jeremy, like he couldn't understand why we loved John Wick. And look, I get that there are some things that are so absurd that... I don't know. Certain normals can't handle it. That's the way I file it in.
Sorry, normals. Jeremy gave us real grief when we talked about him last time on the podcast.
Oh, about Jeremy.
We're going to get him on in the future to talk about a project that we just finished with him.
To defend himself.
So that we are going to talk out of school about Jeremy forever.
The thing is that Jack Reacher is indefensible. It is... The plot is so ludicrous. There are points at which two random characters go, "Who's Jack Reacher?" And Jack Reacher walks through the door. And I think that happens at least twice in that movie.
He plays like a Jesus character.
He does.
Batman Jesus.
Batman Jesus with his shirt off.
But right? it's Tom Cruise. Like,
there's a Charles Bukowski novel that is a thinly veiled account of what it was like to have Barfly made.
No.
Yeah. And it's called Hollywood. So Barfly is a Mickey Rourke, Faye Dunaway movie made about Charles Bukowski, based on Bukowski.
He was in the late 70s?
No, the movie was made in the late 80s, I think.
If
not the early 90s.
Okay.
And it's terrific. But Bukowski writes about exactly what it's like to have a movie like that made and all the craziness. And one of the crazy scenes is Faye Dunaway asking him, but Faye Dunaway in the novel, asking the writer in the screenplay, where is the scene in which I show my legs? Contractually, I have to show my legs. And I was thinking, when Tom Cruise takes his shirt off in Jack Reacher, I'm like, contractually. I mean, don't get me wrong. Tom Cruise looks amazing for a 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
And he's now he's 52.
That's right.
52. He looks great.
Yeah. It's amazing. Tom Cruise, I think contractually, he's obligated to run. It's not taking off his shirt,
he
more
makes
so
fun of that.
The running. And he's run.
That's what he tweeted, right? On his birthday. He's been running in movies since 1982. I mean,
what was the first movie he ran in? Because he didn't run in Top Gun.
No.
He didn't run in like Days
I'm
of
sure
Thunder.
He ran at some point in Top Gun.
Sure. He played volleyball.
His first movie is Endless Love.
I've never seen
he
that.
He plays the guy that gives the main guy the idea to set fire to his girlfriend's house and then put it out in order to make her family like him. But he accidentally burns the house down.
Oops.
as
happens.
Spoiler alert.
Let's bounce back up.
Tom Cruise has had a good run. I mean, if you look at Ghost Protocol, that was an unbelievable film.
It's my favorite of all the Mission Impossible movies, although I love the J.J. Abrams movie.
Three is so good.
Three is really good. That's the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman
is the best villain ever.
That's really great, but I thought in general, this is a series that has gotten steadily better from its crappy first one.
I thought the first one was terrible. I loved the first one. De Palma, the way he shot
The problem I had with it was they got rid of all the interesting characters in the first 5 minutes. I was like, you're killing Kirsten Scott Thomas?
Well, that's true.
I love Kirsten Scott Thomas.
But it has the sequence at the end in the tunnel, which at that point was a new novelty.
Right.
With the gum and the explosion and all that. It was amazing.
That was all done at Industrial Light and Magic with like a quarter scale Bell helicopter that they
crashing into
flew into the tunnel. The second one is an utter piece of trash.
Well,
no one should ever watch that.
I think that you can say that interesting about the series is that he's worked with a different director for every movie intentionally.
Right.
And Tom Cruise prides himself in not only being the face of the series, but having a direction for the series where it's almost like it's the anti-James Bond.
It's an anthology almost.
Every series is a reboot in a different direction that almost reflects its times.
Interesting.
De Palma, you know, the mid-90s, he shoots that movie a certain way.
It feels like a Cold War movie.
And then
it felt like Ronin.
John Woo, it's also pure, you know, 90s style action movie.
But boy, that was terrible.
It absolutely. There's so many terrible things about it, but it's reflecting of like action movies of that time.
But it misses in the same way that sometimes Madonna's I'm Grabbing the Zeitgeist by the Horns albums sometimes miss.
It's the worst movie John Woo has ever made.
Yeah.
Which is really saying something. Because I love John Woo.
Wait. What about the Jean-Claude Van Damme one?
I think that's probably more defensible.
Hard Target.
There's a moment where the street motorcycle's tires change to dirt bike tires when they're driving on the beach.
Oh my god!
Like it's a cut. Wow. Normal tires, real.
Yeah, and you're just probably let that happen.
Fuck right off.
No, I mean that's John Woo's style though. Yeah. He's more about the flash.
It's like ludicrous. I understand.
Asian Michael
each.
Bay, right? So Mission Impossible 3, fantastic movie. J.J. Abrams' first movie. Think about that.
Really?
He casts
Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell.
Because he always wanted to see Felicity as an agent, and now she is a spy in the Americans.
Does the Americans get better than the pilot?
It does.
I haven't watched it.
If you don't like the pilot, though.
Bar.
Really?
Yeah, I thought I can't bear this. This is like hokey comedy. Cold War drama.
There is some comedic elements, like lighthearted elements, but there's a lot of good.
I have to get another chance because people keep telling me it's great.
And then for Brad Bird's first live action movie.
Oh, that movie's so good.
That's phenomenal.
And it using amazing technology. I mean, 3 had the effects in 3. They built part of the bridge for that the Chesapeake Bay bridge scene where they're driving. Which is like the 2000s equivalent of the True Lies bridge scene, which is amazing. He runs the scene where he's running toward the camera and the helicopter is shooting the missile, hits him. He's running at full speed, and then the stunt rig pulls him sideways into the car.
I mean, that was a thing I'd never seen before.
It's a beautiful, beautiful effect. By the way, so I know Jamie Lee Curtis a little bit, and she told me when we met about shooting that scene from True Lies, that she really was hanging from that helicopter
really
for some of those scenes, and that the bridge was 15 minutes away from the takeoff point.
So she had to dangle for 15 minute ride each way?
In that black dress.
Oh, boy. with a harness underneath.
Yeah.
But that's got to be uncomfortable.
Can you imagine?
Jesus.
That is badass.
And we read a lot about movie stars, you know, wanting to do their own stunts. Right, and Tom Cruise is famous for, you know, when he shot Mission Impossible 4, he sat on top of the tallest building in the world, you know.
Swung across it, right? And all these shots from people inhabiting the building with Tom Cruise at the window waving in.
Yep.
Well, and the shot of the rig with the IMAX camera dangled above him.
Right.
Like, that is an indelible, it's unbelievable.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah.
You've done stunts before.
I have.
For the show.
Right.
What is, like...
What's it like to jump off of a building?
So the first thing I have learned is that stuntmen are amazing. So it's like there's certain, you can watch somebody, you can take a look at someone wearing a Steadicam and you can see kind of roughly how the device works and you can kind of grasp it with your head. But it's not until you put a Steadicam vest on and put the 70-pound Steadicam arm on the front of that vest and try and move that camera around, it's not until you do that that you realize what unbelievable physical geniuses a Steadicam operator is. And it's not until you do a driving stunt or jump off a building that you realize how incredible... And you kind of grasp it, right? Oh, it's amazing what these stuntmen do. They roll cars and they jump off buildings. You know what? When you do it, it actually makes it clear that it's three times as hard as you ever thought it was. And for instance, we did an episode on Mythbusters called Dumpster Diving, in which we wanted to find out, can you really jump into a random dumpster and survive? So we went to the dump. We looked at dumpsters. We dumped a dummy in a bunch of them. And as part of that, Jamie and I got trained by a wonderful Hollywood stuntman named Randy Lamb.
Yeah, that's a hand. That's not a name. That's a handle.
She tempted me. Sorry.
Sometimes I just don't even know. I'm just gonna roll.
Yeah, Randy. And Randy is fantastic. Randy is a. He started out as a dancer, which apparently a lot of stuntmen do because you need a tremendous amount of, here's that word again, proprioception and situational awareness.
Physicality, control over your...
Kinesthetic awareness, too. Yeah. Like, Dar Robinson was a stuntman we grew up with who was like, he threw himself out of a 52-story building for Sharky's Machines finale.
Wow.
And so for a 52-story fall, it's 500-plus feet in the air.
Jesus.
Your target... is giant. It's like 60 feet across or 100 feet across, but from up there, it looks like a postage stamp, and it's like 100 feet out from you because the slightest amount of forward momentum carries you. And Randy said, guys like Dar have this kinesthetic awareness that can hit anything. I mean, they literally can aim on their way.
But they're also acting.
And they're acting. So Randy would tell me that he would be doing these things on like Xena, where it's like you kick yourself off of a rock wall backwards, and then that's the end of the shot, and then you look basically up, which is now straight down, and try and aim for the bag.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I was jumping off a 25-foot surface, 25 feet. Now, again, it's 2.5 stories. Look out your 2.5 story window, and it's pretty far.
Yeah.
When you're standing at that edge, and it's time to jump off, and you don't jump. You do what's called a giant step, which is you take a forward step, and then you do the opposite of everything your body wants to do. You actually spread eagle, and you face up, so you hit with your back in order to distribute the force of the fall across the most amount of your back.
Don't try this at home,
guys. Do not try this at home. That moment of stepping off, like standing there is fine. Falling is fine. It's the stepping off that is resisting every natural impulse your body has. And it's an adrenaline rush. And one that made me physically ill by the end of shooting that episode. Like each day I had to do that.
It's just like if you've ever been mountain climbing and rappelled down the side of a mountain face, or we've talked about bungee jumping, which no one should do because it sucks. But like when I was a kid, I wakeboarded every, when it was warm out, I was at the lake after school every day. and learning to do flips and 360s and stuff like that, the hard part isn't getting upside down and doing the rotation. The hard part is having the mental capacity when you're in the middle of something that's happening very, very quickly to turn around and look over your shoulder to spot the landing, because otherwise you're never going to do it.
Right.
Like the learning process for that, the hard part, at least for me, was, hey, I got to turn around and look over. And that's a lot of times when you're learning how to do stuff like that, you get on a trampoline with wires and just keep doing it over and over again until you can land it every time.
Right. And you also understand that the stuntman has to think like a cameraman and like a director an actor. They've got to hit these marks in midair for what the director's looking for.
There's no improv in stunt work.
No, so, it's really intense. So the idea that Tom Cruise would insist and then achieve getting a harness put on and hung, you know, 2,000 feet off the ground on the Burj Dubai. I don't know how high it was. 1,500 feet.
From the making of it, it looked like it was high enough that it didn't matter how high it was.
Right. Anything more than three stories.
Yeah.
It tells me that he's probably amazing to work with. Right. Because you can't just go and do that. You have to actually have an incredible communication awareness with your team and be able to, you know, you're going to hang off that side of the building. How many days do you have to do that? 3 days. You've got to get 40 shots. It's a significant amount of work.
And without that shot, the movie fails. Right. There's no way the movie works.
It's a movie poster. Coming out on site, and the movie poster for the new one is him doing another crazy, crazy stunt that I don't know if I want to spoil.
It was in the trailer, I think. It's
in the trailer. He's hanging off the side of a plane, basically.
Right.
And it's something
beautiful.
That
it looks amazing.
It could have been CG, you know, inside a soundstage, but there are photos of him holding on to the side of a plane.
Right.
You know, I don't think it's flying, but it's... He's there.
So I have learned that, you know, I appreciate for car stunts. If I was going to be a stuntman, I'm not a faller. Mm-hmm. I do not like the adrenaline rush. I do not crave it. And I definitely don't like the headaches.
It hurts when you hit.
It hurts. Yeah. Even a good fall, it's some trauma and it's hard on your body.
You and I are both probably too old for that part of the business
to
at this
be
point.
Sure.
Yeah. Norm, you still have time.
But sure. I would love to be a stunt driver. Like, that is awesome. And because I come from a film background, I like those kind of high pressure situations where you only have a few inches and a half a second to hit the mark and make the thing happen in the way that it needs to happen. I like that kind of pressure.
It has to be unbelievably satisfying when you
nail it.
Execute it perfectly. And you're like, I can't do that better.
Right.
I can do the same thing again, but that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I want to be the guy they set on fire. Now, there's also amazing stunt women too.
Yes. Zoe Bell, one of my all-time heroes.
Speaking of Aussies,
the Death Proof, the car stuff in Death Proof.
So to be clear, Zoe Bell is an Australian Amazon six. She's giant.
She's like 6'3" or 6'4", right?
Yeah. And she's total powerhouse. She was Uma Thurman's stunt double in Kill Bill 1 and 2, and she's in Death Proof as one of the friends that is dealing with Kurt Russell.
She's the blonde girl that rides the hood of the car.
Yeah. And she's also she was Xena's Lucy Lawless stunt double for all of Xena.
So Zoe, and
there's a documentary, I think, about her also that you should watch.
Well, she's from a family of stunt folk, right?
So I got to tell you a stunt story, which is we were doing a Waterslide Wipeout, which was a viral video of a guy sliding down a 200-foot slide, flying through the air and into a kiddie pool.
This was down a big, giant hill.
So we thought, we got tweeted that video a million times and thought, well, we got to do it on the show, but we don't know how to do it safely. And then I realized, we could do it on a lake and just draw our target, like make a ring of ethaphone. So then we built the slide 200 feet long, 225 feet long with the catenary curve at the end. And we started sliding and it worked beautifully. We discovered all sorts of interesting things about, like, you can't have too much water on your slide because it'll slow you down, and that's why the water runs down water slides at water parks.
Oh, right.
Because it actually slows you down. You want less water, but maybe a little soap.
Because why wouldn't you want to go faster?
Well, and I was flying 70 feet through the air. I was landing feet first and making almost no splash. It was beautiful. So the end of the first day, I'm feeling pretty tight about my stunt skills. Oh, also, I'm wearing a latex suit so I can be extra slippery.
Where did you guys get a latex suit?
From Mr. S. Leathers.
Gotcha. Just asking. Sometimes you ask when you know the answer, guys.
Yes. Second day. Now it's time. First day, we've established that it's possible that you fly. Second day is to find out if you fly to a consistent location. So I've got to do two jumps, and that's where we triangulate where I landed and put a target so that the third jump, I can hit it. So I do the first jump. I'm feeling kind of cocky, and I land slightly wrong. And when you're flying 70 feet through the air into water, you land slightly wrong, you get an instant headache. And the water, by the way, was 49 degrees.
Right.
And our motor was out on our boat, so they practically had to paddle to me, which took like 15 minutes in the cold with the headache. I was cranky.
Is the headache like a concussion, pre-concussion sign, probably?
It feels a little tiny bit like a concussion headache. It's like getting body slammed.
Okay.
Right? So then I got to tromp to the top of this dusty hill, 225 feet up, and do it again. And again, I land slightly wrong. And I land consistently, so we know where to put the target. But again, they have to paddle over to me. I'm super cranky by the time they get to me. And I tromp to the top of the hill. It's like 4 o'clock now. If I don't get this right, we got to come back the next day. I am pissed. And the stunt coordinator. So we've had this guy, Nick Plache. We've talked about him on the podcast before. He's the guy that talks to the insurance company for Mythbusters about our stunts. And he's like a third generation Hollywood stuntman and stunt coordinator. He's an amazing guy. Nick is kind of like a surfer dude. He kind of talks a little like that, but it's, you know, that
Brody,
that belie, he's a little bit bro-y, and that belies the deep professionalism that is in his Hollywood born blood. Right? So Nick, unexpectedly, he's been the spotter at the bottom. Now I tromp to the top of the hill and I'm standing there. I'm cold. I'm tired. I'm hurt. And Nick comes to the top of the hill and he goes, this is his dialogue verbatim. He goes, do I have any advice to give you? No, but I have a question. Are you a freaking stuntman or what? Because that's what I tell my boys down in L.A. I tell them Adam and Jamie are the real deal. They can do anything we can do, and they are definitely stuntman material. Adam, it's not about what happens here. He points to his body. It's what's happening here. He points to his head.
Oh,
he says,
God.
The only question I want you asking yourself when you hit the water is, does my director want another take?
Oh my God. That's the end of the second act of the movie about stuntmen.
And then he says, I'll see you at the bottom. I am not kidding. That is precisely what Nick said to me.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I landed so perfectly. I should find the shot. We could link to it. But like barely a splash, my arms outspread. I did not even break the 6-foot target I landed in from 72 feet away. It was perfect. So, thanks to Nick.
That's amazing.
That is the real deal. What he did there, I'm still impressed.
Stuntman, like stuntman Zen.
Stuntman Zen, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna find a better place to end it. What are your guys' favorite? What are your favorite stunt movies? Car stunts has got to be like French Connection and Blues Brothers and
French Connection's amazing. Blues Brothers, actually, Ronin for being a terrible movie, has some great driving stuff in it. Actually, the new Bond, the Quantum of Solace, Skyfall.
Skyfall had great driving.
That driving stuff. Actually, all three of the recent Bond movies.
You know, the bit at the beginning of Goldfinger where he's driving down the mountain in the Lotus yeah. with what's her name? Jean Grey from X-Men, Famke Janssen.
Yes.
And they're like, that is an amazing driving
Goldeneye.
Sequence. In Goldeneye. Did I say Golden? Yeah.
You said Goldfinger.
I meant Goldeneye.
Yeah, one of those is good.
I like both of those movies, Adam.
For stunts, though, I am a deep, deep fan of the Kung Fu film.
Like, the Jackie Chan stuff.
Fist of Legend.
Yes.
Iron Monkey, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Oh.
There's so many sequences in that movie I can just watch over and over and over again.
Once Upon a Time in China, Drunken Master, The Fist of Legend, all the Jet Li Once Upon a Time in China movies, Jackie Chan, Drunken Master,
Donnie
Drunken
Yen.
Master 2, Johnny Yen. Oh my God. Yeah. And Hero, those films, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I love that stunt work. I love the
wire work.
Yeah. The Yuen Woo-ping wire work is still unbelievable.
It's just amazing and gorgeous. Actually, I think the stunt work in the Bourne movies is also phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Really, really dig that. Whatever that style of martial art.
Stuff in the Matrix was what opened the door for me for all of that. Like
Well, that's Yuen Woo-ping.
I know. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, I want to see more of this, and went to Amazon and bought dozens of $5 DVDs from China.
Yeah. All ballet. All ballet guys.
It is. Yeah. It is. Oh, so that was my thing. Sorry, just to finish this up.
Loop it up.
Randy Lam started out as a dancer, and he said his only problem as a stuntman is that he'll finish a fall, like off a balcony, falling and twisting and flying through the midair, and the director will go, Randy, let's do it again, and this time, don't point your toes.
It's not cool to point your toes, guys.
The curse of the dancer come stuntman.
And on that note, I guess we'll wrap it up. See you guys next week. Thanks for watching. Still Untitled.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.